Welcome to Black Light News, where we have conversations on the what, the why, and the how behind Africa's most successful ventures. Hello everyone, welcome to Black Light Build. Black Light Build is a program set aside to talk with African founders who are doing amazing things all around the continent. From founders to C-suite executives to advisors, consultants, you name it, creatives as well, anybody doing amazing stuff, you have them here on Black Light Build. Today I have an interesting guest. His name is Mr. Taiwo Obasan, and he'll be talking to us about his journey at Fondo. Stay tuned. All right, let's meet our guest. Today with me on Black Light Build, I have Mr. Obasan Taiwo James Yakub. Mr. Obasan Taiwo James Yakub is a graduate of economics who, among other things, is the chief consultant at TAB and currently the CEO of Fondol. Fondol is a fintech company, by the way. He has worked as a growth hacker, product designer, and manager across several tech spaces. He was a founding team member that's part of the first four at CowrieWise. He worked closely with the founders as the Growth and Community Lead, scaling the idea of democratizing wealth management for Africans. And he has also helped build and scale EduBridge Academy, which is an edtech helping graduates earn workplace skills and bridging the entry-level skill and knowledge gap. Also, he has used his experience to help build processes, design customer-centric products, and scale Fondol, which is a digital bank that provides individuals and businesses in Africa access to all things related to money management, spending, and investment from one platform. He's currently the CEO of Fondol. If he's not working on fintech or helping other people build their ideas, he's mentoring younger tech entrepreneurs, where he has directly mentored over 200 small businesses, all exploring printing and publishing. And he has been doing this since 2011. He has 4.7 years of FMCG experience. He also has product development, sales, and business development experience. And also, he understands risk and is very passionate about engaging in business activities. His philosophy is this: the higher the risk, the higher the reward in every business transaction. And he started engaging in business activities from the tender age of 16. Ladies and gentlemen, the next voice you're going to hear on Black Light Build is the voice of Mr. Obasan Taiwo James Yakub. We're coming back. Stay tuned. Obasan, thank you for joining us on today's episode of Black Light Build. It's a privilege to host you. You know, looking at the work that you've done and how established you are as a professional, as a techie, I would say that it's my pleasure to welcome you to today's episode, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me. And great work with what you do. Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. So, just a bit of an icebreaker. I'd like to ask you, if you were in a burning building, and you had the opportunity to save just one thing, what would you save?
That's right. And I'm thinking of it. I think I'll just go out with my laptop and my phone. Those are two things, right?
Yeah, those are two things. So you have to choose one.
Okay, I'll go ahead with my laptop. I believe I have actually this on my phone, on my laptop, and yeah, I can. I think all right. So.
All right, that's a good one. That's a good one. I would actually have just walked out with my phone because everything is on my phone. Right. Okay, that's a good one. All right, so on Black Light Build, what we try to do is to get to know the people that are doing what, why, when, the hows behind a lot of ventures that we see, a lot of impacts that we see. And it's trying to, you know, sometimes we read about the pitches, the raises, and we get to see these founders from those lens. But here, what we try to do is to go deep down and talk about specifics, right? So I'm going to be asking you a couple of questions, and I hope that our listeners will get to, you know, see, you know, have a peek rather into the day-to-day of a CEO of a startup and someone that's as established as you in the startup space. All right, so here we go. First question, Mr. Obason, can we meet you? So tell us about yourself, what you do, and one interesting fact about you.
All right, so let me start with the last question, then I'll move to you meeting me. I believe this will summarize who I am. So one interesting fact about me is largely that, now thinking about it, it's more or less like two things.
Okay.
But I think one interesting fact about me that people barely know, right, is the fact that I don't enjoy like the entire public, what they seem to be fascinated about at some point. Say movies, musicians, I like antique things here. Things that are quite ancient and old. Right, then the other meeting me, I'm Taiwo Obason. I always prefer to be called Obason, no appellation, no prefix or suffix. I graduated from the University of Lagos Economics, and I started doing business at 16, just like you read out of my profile, and that was largely based on seeing necessity, right, and outlook on, say, life and all. So I grew up somewhat in Ogun State of Nigeria, where Ijebu, to be precise. And there's this entire thing around Friday, Saturdays, when a lot of people come into the town. Like, I grew up with big cars, right? And you somewhat hear about, oh, this person is the CEO of this. This person started this company. This person knows this business. And right from that point, that's likely been, another thing is I like reading a lot of biographies. So it has likely been just reading about this person, how the person made their money. And I've always been fascinated by the fact that there's something in my own world back then called Okantebu. Like, that's how I call it, Okantebu Naira.
Okantebu money.
Yes, accountable money. So how can I make accountable money? Right. So right from, say, secondary school, even trying to make money for my colleagues, right? So that has really been what the opportunity had been for me. Then I think my first business was actually, I went for a competition. I won the competition. I think I was in maybe X. That should be just S3 or SS1. I won that competition, and there was this gift and all that they gave me. So a couple of it were more or less like warmers, coolers, and all things that they use in, like, catchers use largely. So when I took all of those things, there was nothing for me to do. So I was just like, oh, what if I can lend people in my household, and even around me these days whenever they want to do parties. Like, you know, Jebu people, they do parties like
every weekend.
Yeah, so my mom thought, oh, that's not possible. I mean, but luckily, I think we're Christian as at that time. There was one event they were having in church, and there was an event they were having in church, and there was not enough coolers and warmers to use. So I just told them, I have one, and if you pay me $15 per day, I'm going to give you all through this convention. So that was like how that first one started. Till tomorrow, I still charge, like, all of those things are no longer even with me. But my mom still feels obligated to give me a share of whatever any of those equipment I still use. That was like the first one. Then the other one was more or less like finishing school, right? I'm not necessarily I wasn't born with a silver spoon. Maybe that's not the word, but came from home where my mom no longer, my mom and my dad were separated. So, right, the man is the richest somewhat in traditional African settings. So for most women, it's slightly more of resetting your life, trying to start all over again once you leave your husband. So it was more or less like out of that. I just knew that, you can't. And there was this entire thing, because the man moved on, like, with his life to enjoy other women with his money. So it was just more of, you do not know book, you cannot make it. That was written out for us, right? And the other thing was, you just have to make this money to, number one, just to be sure that once you make the money, you can compensate like your mom and all of that. Yeah. So right from then, I just knew that I need to keep winning competitions, keep getting scholarships to pay my own tuition fee to ensure that my mom doesn't. So there was all this competition, I think I can also, that I lost, and I already planned that. I was going to be a big boy all through my senior, so I think SS3. So I just thought around, okay, what can I, if I've lost this ICANN competition, how else can I make money? So I started going to, I think it was a PS, a game center, sort of. So I now started calculating mathematics and understanding how some of the, like, the games would work. I mean, the fast games would work for them. So from there, I was predicting and I was winning. I think in form of tech startup, that could have been a tech startup. I knew how to code, right? Yes. Then finished secondary school. I knew that I was going to, like, blast my SSE, go to ICANN ECO. In fact, I did two different subject combinations in both, right? The results came out. I didn't write them that yet because I felt I needed to learn something that will make me a lot of money before I get into, like, higher institution. The results came out. It was even announced on, say, radio, so that I think the then governor of the state, so wanted to reward them, and my name was listed. And in our own house, my mom banned us from TV and radio just because she has this thing that you have to manage your time. Instead of being that, there are tons of books that you have read. To read. Our grandpa was owned a bookshop. So I grew up literally reading books from 1842, 1940. Maybe the more easy, I like old things, I know. So I decided to let me go and do music. I thought classical musicians, they make a lot of money. But thank God that I didn't go ahead, right? to go and learn classical music. And all. Then I ended up printing. Then in my first 6 months, I became like the most senior apprentice and I was making a lot of money. In fact, I didn't want to go to school then.
Seriously?
I was like, so you can make this money from... Yes, you can make this money from...
From printing.
I became a big boy again. Right.
Wow.
I could change phones. I think there was this sliding Nokia phone then. I got it like without thinking. I went, all my friends, they were like saving for it. I was just living the life.
Then you were balling.
There was nothing I could. It was as bad as I don't wear a shirt like twice in a month. I send it to them, I don't like this shirt again. I was like a baller, right?
Okay.
Just leaving that shirt. This shirt, someone has another one on my street. I can't wear it again.
Ah,
I can't buy another one. So I was literally wasting money, right?
Okay.
Then my mom was like, no, you have to put a stop to this, because all my friends, they were already in like year two, year three, thereabouts.
Yeah.
And I got an admission into Ife broke my heart. I had to say that a bit. So Ife broke my heart. They gave me
whose heart has been on break?
So they gave me local government studies instead of international relations. I was like, me, local government studies, never
local government. What am I going to international.
Like, so okay. From there I moved to Lagos. I got admission into OU. I wasn't serious because OU was like where I was doing my business. So business was coming. I was just attending account. I found accounting quite boring, right? Because it's just input, output. Like, you know what should be here, you know, just balance the thing. Nothing else. Follow principles and all. I wasn't that kind of person, right?
Gosh.
So I decided not to go ahead. Then I came to Lagos. I started working. I was doing my printing. Money was just coming that time, right? The economy was still quite good, so it could still charge people like a lot of money.
Yeah.
And the margins were a lot. So for a small, like, in fact, when I go to present, people are like, are you here for your boss or you are the one? And I would just have to say, I'm the one who, see, this is me. I'll get jobs, corporate jobs, and all. Then someone else told me there was Unilag, right? I was like, Unilag, I hate that school. Like, all of them, they are not like my kind of people. Then I got into Unilag Economics. I think I was 2012 or 2013, I can't remember. Then I continued like the printing thing, economics. That was when I now started seeing that, there's a lot more other than just more or less like making money in businesses, right? There's a need for you to make impact. I know. So that was all led to me finding out different businesses, different tech, things I thought tech could do, things I don't know if tech would do. I wasn't writing code, but I knew how to break things down to like anybody and all.
Okay.
To graduation and all of those other things that you most likely read on my
profile,
like during the introduction. So that's largely about me, how I started business, and I mean up to now, thank God, and no. So
all right, thank you very much, Obasan. Honestly,
yeah.
From what I've heard, you were all after the money, all about the money, like, and you went after it.
Yeah, well,
along the line, you found value, and then you were able to marry your desire to get the money and value to others. You were able to marry it to create something meaningful. I think that's a lesson to learn. Whatever it is you're going after, just go after it. As you go, the path will become clearer, the picture will become bigger, and you know, you'll be able to align things as you go. So I'm moving to my next question.
Can I add something to that?
Yes, you can.
From what you just said. All right. So one thing about that is more of the thing around passion and survival. Like, okay. So a passion is largely what I always advise people to like do is more or less like follow what will make you, what will give you like that survival at the moment, right? Along the path, you definitely be able to fine tune your passion, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what I always somewhat encourage people to do.
All right, thank you. So go after something that will make you survive at that moment, and then you will be able to fine tune your passion. Because the thing is this, passion alone cannot fuel some things, right? So you need to be able to survive, then fine tune your passion as you go. I think that's really insightful to Diamond, and thank you for sharing that. All right, so I'll move on to the next question. Tell us about Fondle. How did it all start? I know you've told us about how you liked money and then you went after it. But how did it all start? How did you get into the mix with Fondle? I don't know. I'm just thinking, a guy that's coming from printing, a guy that's coming from a Nijebu guy that just wants to be able to ball, and then he gets into tech, and then he's doing fintech. So how did all of that happen?
So for Fondle, I think I skipped a bit of what led to all of this, right? Especially fintech and all. So it was largely more of this value creation and understanding, you know, most of these things that we've learned. And I think when I wanted to write, say, CFE, right? I was still like quite fascinated by going into like finance full time. I figured that there were a lot of things that you can do, like you can leverage tech to do, coming from the fact that I've done like quite a bit of other businesses. So it was just more, how can you get value from these things that big banks, big institutions do, in a way that you can get your own value, you can make people's lives better, and you can see finance, right? Things that are not necessarily real, you can see them in motion, right? So that was like one of the things that largely motivated me to go into fintech, right? So after a couple of time, actually the Fondle idea is from is uniquely not mine, right? Colourpod Joseph. So he was running a money lending business, and he also figured that there is a gap in between. So he was into the entire money lending business, and he figured that the value chain was quite broken, right? So he knew there was a need to offer more, right? But you know, sometimes when you have an idea to offer more, there is also a need for you to get like someone maybe within that industry or someone with similar idea, right, that can fine-tune your skill set. So that was likely it, right? So we had the call, and right from that phone conversation, I knew this idea I have, this idea he has, and what I have been thinking in my head, right? This is like the right person for us to come together to get this done, right? And right from that phone conversation, we're able to fine tune what exactly the market needs, right? And what the market needed as at that point in time, and what we needed to do to just ensure that people can access all things from a single place. So from there we started, and we kept fine-tuning the idea to the founder that we have today. So that's slightly about how the entire thing around founder came to be, and it's been more learning from the market for both of us and also everyone on the team, right? So it's been more of understanding this is like how markets can change, this is what people really want, this is like how you should position things, this is what the future of finance really is, right? And yeah, we are where we are, we are where we are today, by the grace of God. So that's like really how Fundum started. It was just more of seeing someone, seeing a problem, seeing who can build this and who can we work together to get it started. And that was like how we did that.
Right. Thank you, Obasan. I have gotten insights. Two things: learning from the market, seeing a problem, seeing a gap, and then building something to actually bridge that gap. I think the problem that we have mostly is that people just have ideas, build stuff just for the sake of building stuff. They see some fancy things abroad, then they bring it here, and they think that it's going to work. So I'm of the opinion that, and like you rightly said, we should be able to identify problems. I always say that African problems will be solved by Africans. Solutions will be built by Africans for Africans. And this is something that you have validated again and again with the story about how Fundum started. Thank you for sharing that. I'm moving on to... Okay, so I know you've mentioned it, you've actually talked about it, but I'll just sum this up. How difficult was it when you first started Fundum, and what are your current challenges, you know, in the whole Fundum being a CEO, having a product in the market, serving the needs of customers and all of that? How difficult has it been, and what are your current challenges?
Okay, so for every startup, when we are just starting, the biggest challenge that one has to first scale would be, how do I have this idea? How do I make this, turn this idea into a business? So there's even difference between when you are solving a problem and when you can like make one out of that solution that you built, right? So that was like the first thing for us. How do we do this? What we are trying to do is quite unique, which is more or less like people are going via the segmentation route, right? Mm-hmm. We are trying to leverage, say, more of bringing everybody together, right? So it's more or less like the direct opposite of what people are doing. How do you make sense out of that? How do you convince the market that this is like a need that they have, right? Because sometimes we have needs, but we don't necessarily know what the perfect solution would be. So the market interprets its solution maybe based on the environmental factor. So building something and instilling it into their current behavior is like one of the issues that we had. But over time, via speaking with different people, speaking to users, building different into different beta, closed beta groups and all of that, able to somewhat fine-tune that. The next thing would now be, after that has been done, who are the people that can pick up this solution and in a way run with it, which is more or less like building your team. Because oftentimes when the team, and it's a lesson we've learned over time too, if people are not connected to the vision of the company, it will do them, I mean the employees, a lot of harm if you keep them like in their role, because they end up hating their jobs, they end up not being productive, which will also harm the firm itself. So at some point, it is very important for you to know who are the people that are connecting with the vision. If this person is not connecting with the vision, can I help this person connect to the vision that we have? Also, once you figure that this person can never, in a way, connect to their vision, so there are two sides to it. There's the side of connecting to the vision to provide their solution, and there's the side of connecting to the vision to understand what you are building. Because the person needs to be able to execute well, like in their day-to-day, like bring the vision into it. Then as a user, because each team member too becomes like a user at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So it's just better for you to like manage that. So people, product, then the last thing is now more of positioning. Right? How do you position? You have the great team now, you have the great product? How do you position it? Where do you position it? So those are like the three things. Why not forgetting every CEO's headache, which is definitely not to run out of money, right? So those were like the challenges that we're able to face. But later on, you know, as you grow bigger, you now start thinking around compliance, you now start thinking around legal things, right? You
know, regulation.
Yes. So, and for us that we are playing in a space that is highly regulated, right?
Yeah.
Every day you have to just think, hope I won't
hope my business is still legal.
Yes. There's always that memo, right? Mm. That you're expecting at every point in time. So that's largely how it has been.
Right, thank you very much. Thank you. People, products, and positioning. Those three key things. That's what I would take out of all of you. All you said has been really, really, you know, from a startup. So from somebody that is in the startup business point of view, all you said, first-hand experience, and I'm glad that other people will get to hear this firsthand from you. All right, so I'm about to ask a question that, I don't know, let's see. Some people really, since people think that this program should be inspirational, when I added this to the list of questions I was going to ask, I kind of bounced it off a couple of people and they were like, are you sure people want to share these scenarios? I'm about to ask you to share your highs, like one of the proudest moments you had running Fondol. And also the lowest moment you've had, right, running Fondol. I'm asking because entrepreneurship is not what people think it is, right? People don't see the downsides. Only the founders and the CEOs and the people that are inside this thing get to see the downsides. So I would like you to, you know, just share with us one of your proudest moments and then one of your lowest moments. And then probably take a lesson from that too.
Okay, so it's largely a marathon, so that means it's not like a sprint where you just do it once, right? So there are definitely going to be up and downs, right? Definitely going to be down times. There are definitely going to be low times. High times too. I think one of my proudest moments have been when internally for us had been when we were able to get clarity on what division itself is. That was a very proud moment, and that was done largely by the team internally. So that was a very proud moment for us to see that. Definitely people that are not even on the management team really understand this vision and they'll be able to give us clarity in what it is. So it's just more or less like when you figure that people that are below you, they came up with like a clarity, something that they made your own vision quite clear to you, then it's more or less like a very proud moment, because that means over time you have been able to, maybe by what you are doing and all, you've been able to imbibe that vision in there. So that happened, and that was largely a proud moment for us. Another proud moment, and this happens whenever we are able to solve a problem, right? Those little things that people say is more or less like what keeps us, what keeps our engine running, right? When you see people say, oh, Founder was, especially when we lost our virtual USD card, when we're having a lot of people were just saying, oh, I was not able to, this is like the only solution, this is that. Those little testimonials, they are just proud moments. Or when another time was I was sitting in an event as part of the audience, and one of the speakers that I have never seen before in my life, right, mentioned Fondol and used Fondol as a business case, right?
Wow.
For a couple of things. I was like, really? Do you mean Fondol, or there's another Fondol that
you don't know?
we are talking about here, right?
Yeah.
The person was able to this means that we are waking up every day to do what is quite we are making impact, right? One of the low times is likely when unexpected things happen, right? Mm. So when you think, and that is the startup life, right? If people are running, another thing I get to tell people, right? If you are running from suit and tie life, like 9-to-5 life, because you think startup is all interesting, the tech bros, all of those things are on Twitter, tech bros, yeah, and all of those things, right?
Yes.
You might end up getting depressed out of the entire thing. There are moments when you just think that, why am I even doing this, right? Why am I trying to, why can't I just be like a normal person trying to just live life?
Live my life.
Like, why am I trying to solve a problem?
Yeah.
So there are those moments, right? But again, oftentimes you just see something happen. Maybe there's something bad, there's a downtime, right? And you cannot solve user's problem. They are calling you that, hey, this one is happening down. And there's just this little ray of light, right? You just pick it up, or you just go back to your memory and say, oh, yesterday we were able to do this. That means tomorrow we should be able to do more. Right, so
yeah,
there are those moments that are sometimes sprinkled across an entire week, like at different times of the day, you just see something. Are you this year? We've had sometimes that you just wake up, you're about to launch a product, you just wake up, and the regulator is just like, so is banned. You cannot do this again.
Like
this kind of, you can.
Who writes the scripts, right?
Exactly, it's sort of work. Or you are set to go on vacation, right? Like, mm. There was next month I should be able to take a leave, and I see they were listening to me. The following day, they came up with something I have to do it for months.
Wow.
Right, so those are like the things. But if you know what the end goal really is for you, it's also quite easy to now say, okay, let me just get myself out of this entire moment and let me just guide. And again, it's always good to have someone to talk to. It's always good.
Very important.
So that whenever you are venting, there's someone that have done this before, that maybe that person has done business before, has failed or is successful, can just say, this is what I'm thinking. This is like how crazy it is for me and all. And one of the things I'm also grateful that the dynamics of the team, right? It's super good, right? Which is another thing I would say founders should look out for, people that are running startups. Make sure that the dynamics is good, so that at your own low point, that might be another person's high point, and mm-hmm. Largely just, this is what is happening, and yes, we just talked.
All right, thank you very much, Abason. You've really elaborated on the issue of regulation. I know how fintechs, I think that fintech startups really should just subscribe to paid plans on anxiety management due to the regulators that we have. So I'm like, so someday a fintech founder, he goes to bed, his business is legit, and then he wakes up at 8 a.m. the next morning, his business is considered illegal.
Exactly.
So it's really...
Exactly. This is a huge... I was speaking to investors about this revenue stream. Now that revenue stream does not even exist again. or you do an investor's report for last month, and yeah, Everything's reported in US dollars. This month you've done better, but it's not your fault. Naira has depreciated, so you've not even improved. Mm. After all, right?
Mm.
So there are all of those everyday days. Yes, I think that's like the term we use internally.
Everyday days.
There are those everyday days. Yes, but you just have to like pick it up and move on.
All right, thank you very much for sharing that with us. So we know that it's beyond the glamorous things that you see the MacBooks, the photos, all of that. It's real hard work, and it could be a lot more pressing and a lot more demanding, particularly on the mental health of the founder and the team. And like Obasan said, you need to have someone to talk to share those low moments with. Thank you very much. So as we wrap up, I have just two more questions, right? What is your message to aspiring founders, leaders, entrepreneurs, even regulators? You can take your shot at them. This is the opportunity. What message do you have from a standpoint, from your point of view, who you are, what you've been through, what you're currently doing? What do you have to say to people who are out there looking to build something, people who are currently building something, people that have built, and people who, you know, work together to assist people that build? What message do you have for them?
Okay, so I think the most important thing, which is more or less like learn to go back, would be more of just build and launch. There are over 100 persons thinking that they have like the same idea that you have, right? And I figure that there's this entire thing around, oh, I want to get it perfect, I want to get this. Just build it, launch, fail as much as possible as we can fail, so you know when to go back and restart, right? Then there's this entire sunk cost thing, especially in the mind of founders, entrepreneurs, and all that. Oh, I've done this. Sometimes what the breakthrough is not necessarily in you like doing that same thing over and over again. Just it might just be that you need to just pivot a bit, or need to just think around like how to do that, solve that problem differently, right? Using different methods, right? So that's like that. Then also leverage tech as much as possible. Do things that there's this general saying by one of the co-founders of YC that do things that do not scale at first, right? And I would add to that by saying that when you are starting out, try as much as possible to do the every work so you can automate them and you can have a lot of economies of scale, right? Then lastly, is more or less like it is better to own 1% of a $1 trillion company than to own 100% of a $50 company. That simply means that as much as possible, try to compensate for the skills you do not have. That might mean you might have to pay for it, you might have to lose a bit of value for it, right? So as much as possible, ensure that what you are trying to build is 100%, you might just be 10% or 5%. Try to compensate for those other things that you don't have. And lastly, just keep building. We hope we are in a tough environment, so that means we have to, and we are competing globally, right? By competing globally, I mean you that you are just starting, there's someone with hundreds of millions of dollars from China, from Korea, from this trying to enter the African or Nigerian markets to do that same thing that you are doing, right? Just keep doing it, right? Let me put it this way. Just ensure that you are shining your light in the corner of the room that you are, right? So I think that's what I think.
Thank you very much, Seth. Just make sure that you're shining your light in the corner of the room that you are. That means you may not have control over everything, but the small one that you have control over, the small percentage of the market, make sure you hold it down and you deliver as much value as you can. I'd say those are solid words. Any founder or any business leader listening to this will surely be inspired by hearing all of this that you've had to say. All right, so it wouldn't be bad if I asked you all that your plans for the future, unicorn. Are we going to see anything? I don't know. What are your plans for the future in a few minutes, and then we'll wrap this up.
So future is somewhat something that I care as much as possible not to overthink. But to fund our first, the aim for us will be able to, for us in the next 5 years, to be the primary bank, and not just the primary bank, the financial partner of close to 15 million Africans, right? That would be the big dream, that we know that these are not just registered users, but these are people that we are helping achieve their financial goals. Right? Mm-hmm. That would be like, that's like the major goal, right? Valuation and every other thing comes after that value.
Yeah.
That we've been able to do to people. Then personally, the long-term goal for me is actually quite interesting. It would be to someday retire. That someday you got that far, right? Someday retire to be an academic professor, lecturing behavioral economics, right? And maybe a bit of what I currently tag Afroeconomics, like African culture and international economics.
Mm.
Yeah, so that most likely is like one thing. That's somewhere. Most likely might not be Nigeria, right? But because teaching in the Nigerian university, I know what my lecturer is about to do.
How many times did you go on strike? Are you in uni? Just if you ask yourself that.
I actually even a bit attended. I was privileged to attend UNILAC, right? I think I attended some King of All Universities, and that's a direct translation of their name. I've done probably spent it, right? I'm
not quite sure. It just did. I hope they don't come for you. Don't come for me. Obasan, you should come. Okay, so just let go, right? Please just let it go, right? Just let it go. Okay, thank you very much for coming on Black Light Build today, Obasan. I must say that the time that we have spent listening to you, the insights that you have shared, are valuable to us and our listeners, and we are very confident that when we, you know, when we share this, I'm pretty sure the feedback we will get will be mind-blowing, I can assure you. I'm going to leave with the words that you said. You took it right out of my mouth. It's better to own 1% of $1 trillion or $1 trillion naira company, depending on the currency you want, than to own 100% of a 50 kobo company. Try to compensate for the skills that you do not have. Those are golden words. Those are not my words. Those are the words from Obasan Taiwo, CEO at Fundo. He spent some time with us here on Black Light Build. We really appreciate you coming on, and we hope that subsequent editions you will come back again, and we would have smashed those goals that you really just outlined here for us a couple of moments ago. On behalf of the Black Light team, my name is Stephanie Tiaka. We're signing out of today's episode. Thank you for listening.